This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 25, Energy Levels. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about energy levels, how to get them up to the pre-season excitement and keep them there even as the long season goes on. We also help players with passion. One player has a passion problem in that his parents don't want him to play even though he really wants to, and another player who is having trouble with his slow left arm spin bowling and bowling over the wicket. Find out more about that on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, and it doesn't matter where you are or who you are. We are here to help you out for the next half an hour or so. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
How are you all? Okay.
Very good, thank you. Yes, so you, what's the cricket scene like with you at the moment? Is there still plenty going on?
We've got plenty going on. Not so much here. I'm more remote. I'm actually in school today. I'm working with a couple of lads that are coming up to a school in September. So doing some MOT checks with them. And then I'm at a cricket festival this afternoon. Yesterday I went to watch the West of England play against a Somerset side. And also spoke to our three guys who were picked for England under-19s yesterday, which was really good to speak to them and congratulate them. And also another lad that got into the development 11 that's going to play against Sri Lanka as well. So four internationals in the same team was pretty good effort.
Yeah, that's great. Lots of talent on show, lots of youngsters doing their thing. That's always good to see, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly is. You know, and they work so hard, and I'm just really pleased. A couple of them, it's their first time in an England shirt as well. So, yeah, really pleased for them.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. Are you? Has everything stopped now? Are you on full cricket break yet?
Oh, well, I'm almost there. Actually, it's almost. The last day will be today. Last day at the grammar school today, and a few things to get done. There'll be a little bit of cricket over the next 3 weeks, which we just try and keep some options open for the boys, because in contrast to Gara's, where they're largely borders, our boys are all local, so they're all within probably half an hour. So we do keep a few things going on, but it will be a drastic reduction on the usual opportunities that we're given. So a little bit quieter, which will be very, very nice. But looking forward to some time away and a bit of a break.
Lovely, lots of DIY to do, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
It's an interesting time of year, actually, because something that has been on my mind, particularly around sort of, you know, past the middle of the season, but still a little way from the end of it, is the whole idea of energy levels and keeping people interested and working hard and keeping that energy level up, not only in terms of attending practice and working hard to improve, but also just more generally the motivation to have cricket around at this time of year, because especially with younger players, there's so much people could be doing. But cricket is just one option among many. And so I guess keeping energy up when people are there is a really important part of that. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, and whether it's with younger players, you know, who maybe find that their attentions are spread elsewhere, or with senior players who are finding it a long season, what ways have you got, what tools have you got in your toolbox for helping keep energy levels up?
Well, I sort of go a little bit down the less is more route occasionally, just to keep it fresh. So I might, for example, have a shorter practice followed by a social event or something at the cricket club, rather than having the normal length of practice. I might even just say, okay, we're not going to do a practice at all today, just so when they come round to that next game, they're hungry for it. Because I don't think we can get away from the fact that whether it's a child or whether it's an adult, the thing that they really live for is the game. And often it's the commitment of the practice, particularly, as you say, when there's lots of things around for kids to do in the summer holidays, which is the demotivator at times. So I think a less is more approach sometimes can be work. You know, not for the whole summer, obviously, but certainly dropping in a week with a lower loading and more emphasis on the game can sometimes keep those motivations up. And I don't think that's too different in this day and age where families are being stretched in this direction and that direction, that we need to be aware of that. I also think the other thing that we need to think about is doing some different format stuff. So, you know, with kids having so many things to do, rather than losing them to the game, you know, can we put on a different type of format which is more inclusive, which gives more opportunity, which may be, you know, six aside, eight aside, with barbecue going and whatever, and trying to involve the family, I think is really important, because if we don't do that, then the summer holidays almost become a less cricket environment rather than a more cricket environment.
Yeah, that's a good idea. What about you, Lavers? Do you find, I guess, especially with guys, schoolboys, that kind of age, where it's easy to get distracted, even within a session. Do you know what I mean? You can have guys who sort of lose interest a little bit, and then everybody starts spinning the wheels a little bit, even if they are at practice. Do you know what I mean? So what about motivating guys who maybe they manage to get to practice and they manage to get to games, but their heart's not in it? You must have seen that.
Yeah, you do get it from time to time, and they I do kind of get your idea here that younger guys probably do want a little bit more engagement and a little bit more going on to keep them stimulated, because I guess that's the world they live in now. There's a lot more options, a lot more things happening. Within sessions, I think it's, if we're going to try and get all these players engaged and invested in what they're doing throughout a whole session and throughout a series of sessions, then it's pretty important that we do the same from a coaching point of view, from a staff point of view. And rather than one person taking the lead all the time and one person being the sole voice and the person that is there to motivate and the person that's there to direct, etc., then it's quite useful to kind of share that energy around as well. So if you divide a session up or a series of sessions up amongst the two or three people you may have, if you're lucky enough to have more than one person who's delivering, then that can be a really good way just to provide a different voice and a different focus for the attention, because the same person over and over again can get a little bit repetitive. But again, sharing out the sessions and making sure that there are elements where there's real focus on development, there's elements where it then relates back or directly into a game, there are elements that are completely player led, and trying to have segments that are going to challenge the way players think in slightly different ways, which will in turn engage them, but again all fall under this banner of improvement or development within cricket, which is where we want to try and retain our focus as much as we can. But yeah, if we can have different sections with that and different ways of engaging within that, then hopefully we'll retain their attention a little bit more, and we'll get a few more improvements and benefits from it.
Yeah, it can be a challenge sometimes, can't it? Especially if you get if you're in a situation where there's a range of abilities and a larger number of people. Sometimes you can get people with high levels of interest and low levels of interest, and managing that is a tricky thing to do, isn't it, Gareth?
Yeah, it is, as soon as you add numbers to it. But again, I think it comes down to making leaders out of others within the group as well. And try and pick out those people when you run in that session. If you have got high numbers and you can't do it all on your own, try and pick out those people that have natural leadership skills and give them that responsibility for that evening. You know, say, OK, I know you're one of our better players, but it would be really fantastic if you could take that group off and do this fielding drill or this combination of fielding drills with them. That that'd be a huge asset. And then, as well as developing the cricketer, which invariably you're going to do over the course of the 6 months that you work with them, you're also developing those leadership skills, which are absolutely crucial as those players go through into whatever cricket environments they end up in.
And from the player's point of view as well, it's I don't think there's too many coaches who, if a player came up to them and said, "Can I run a fielding drill, or you know, can I do a batting practice with these five guys over here?" I don't think there's many coaches who would go, "Oh, do you know what? No, don't worry about it." I think most coaches would be happy if they feel like the person can do it, that for them to take the lead on that particular area. So. I guess I'm saying if you're a player, don't be shy to do that either. It's all right. The coach is not going to mind.
We did a great thing this summer. We had a huge number of under 14 kids this year, far more than our coaching provision could allow. So yeah. I opened up the opportunity for our top team, the Mayor's 11, who don't play on Saturdays, to offer to coach and to run little mini games for the guys and the girls who weren't involved in fixtures on those days. And we were inundated with some of those fellas. You know, we put it out there as an option, and we had a minimum of two people each week working with 20 kids, giving them a fantastic experience, but also developing their own coaching and leadership skills within that as well. And you know, I was dead pleased with the way that they went, and they enjoyed it and gave us good feedback about their experience too.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes no round. That is three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team wants to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question: innovation beats tradition.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question: skill beats strength.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question: bats are too big.
No.
No.
It's time now for the mailbag on the Pitch Vision Cricket Show. That is a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers to the Pitch Vision website. And the best question of the week, after we've answered them, of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And there are other ways you can get in touch with us, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. But for now, let's go to the first question, which has been sent in by AJ. And AJ has a simple question, but perhaps a complex answer. He says, "My passion is cricket, and I want to play cricket, but my parents don't allow me. What should I do now?"
Well, I think the starting point would be, as we talk about with all sort of conflict situations, is a discussion, and a discussion to find out from your parents what their reservations are, what it is that makes them not want you to play cricket. And it could be that they have some very good reasons for that, and only they will know, but that's got to be discussed. It could be that they're ignorant about the game, but they haven't had exposure to the game before, but they don't see it in a positive light that we see it in, and therefore we need to start to find out where their starting point, I suppose, is around sport, around, you know, the inclusion within sport, the benefits of sport. So I would encourage, first and foremost, a pretty robust conversation, asking them to present their case forward of why. And once we've got the whys, then we can have a look to see whether those whys are accurate, whether they're insurmountable, whether there are some options to work around some of those whys in order to get the desired result that you want, you know. And obviously we're going to be fairly comfortable to support you here with your dreams and intentions of playing the game. But more importantly, I think it's really key that your parents have their say in the reasons why they aren't happy for you to play cricket as yet.
Passion is a difficult thing, isn't it? Because passion is something that you've got that fire within you, and you can't consider anything else because you've got this deep desire. But yet passion is also something that doesn't pay the bills. So, you know, often parents or look at the odds of you becoming a cricketer and then say, well, actually, you know, it'd be much better for you to go and get a degree and forget about this dream you've got of playing for your country, because it's unlikely to happen. So, you know, it's playing the percentages, look to get an education and get a career and all that stuff. And then, but it's often hard for especially generations to understand each other, isn't it? And that's where communication becomes key, doesn't it, Lavis? Because if something like that is the reason, then it's very hard for one side to empathise with the other side, isn't it? And it becomes sort of, but you don't understand, and that comes from both sides. And when the argument is, but you don't understand, that becomes very tricky, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is often a case of one not understanding the other, and one side thinking that one thing's right and the other thinking that they're completely right as well. And as we know, in so often in these cases, it's not necessarily of one camp or the other camp. It's a case of getting a balance between the two. There's no reason, if it was as you alluded to, it could be a career thing. If it's a career thing, well, the best way to benefit someone around sort of stressful times is to give them something that's going to de-stress them. And it could be that cricket's the thing that does that, or the best way to keep someone motivated again is to give them a period of time away from their challenging situations that's a bit more relaxing. So finding something that's going to balance with the thing that potentially his parents do want him to do is something that's going to be really valuable to make that other area of his life, which we were obviously not aware of, a little bit more successful potentially by giving him a bit more freedom, a bit more enjoyment in life, and obviously not putting him in a situation like he is now, where he's getting frustrated, which we can all understand. I think there's two ways to approach it. The one way would be for us to say what's the details, what's the information, what's the scenario, and really get in depth into this as an individual case study. The other way is to throw it back to AJ and say that you can remove the key words from the statement and almost take yourself away from your situation. And if you could say your passion is whatever it might be, your passion is is fast bowling, your passion is golf, or your passion is what's your passion, David? I don't know. Eating, is that what it is? So your passion, you could be, your passion is eating meat, and my parents don't want me to. What do I do? Just externalize yourself from the problem and look at it and say, well, if this was the problem, how would we approach it? Because almost doesn't really matter what the issue is in terms of how we approach it. It's what's the balance between the two of you. The word that we're actually fighting over isn't that important in terms of working out how we approach it. It's more a case of how would I approach this situation if it wasn't me, and if it wasn't something that I was so clouded about and so invested in that maybe I've become a little bit confused. And you can do that just by removing that, putting it in someone else's shoes, and it might give you a little bit more perspective on how you can logically work through this process and logically find a way to talk to them about it. But obviously in your case as well, knowing all the information, it then gives you a chance to think about how you can understand their side a little bit better, which is going to be really important for you then delivering your side of the argument and your justification for what you want to do, which is play cricket, which is hopefully in a few weeks time or a few months time, wherever it is, we'll have an email back for you which says you are playing cricket, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, that's great advice, David. I think finding similarities. If you feel like you're in a conflict with someone, often you can assume that you're taking view X and that the other side is taking view Y, and never the twain shall meet. But often there's far more similarities in what you want to achieve than there are differences. It's just there's minor things. And if you can find what those similarities are, you can often work towards a solution that both sides like. And so if you start, as you say, Lavis, if you start with looking at what you agree on, then often that cuts out a lot of the stuff that you thought you disagreed on. You know what I mean? You think you disagree on everything, and actually you only disagree on two small things, and 90% of it's the same.
I wonder what the parents' email would be. It would be something along the lines of our passion as parents is for our son to da 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 da.
Yeah.
However, he doesn't want to do it. What should I do now? So it'd be interesting to put yourself in their shoes and think what would their email be if they were sending in an email about the same situation? And then that might give you a bit of perspective on where you are and where they are. And as you said, it's often not a complete conflict where you disagree with everything. It's going to be a few strands probably of it. And from there, you'll find a middle ground, which hopefully will be something you can build on.
Next question is from Isan. And Isan says, I'm a left-arm spinner. And I want to ask some advice on bowling over the wicket. I have a wide round-arm action. If I had to pick a current international to compare with, it's Shakib Al Hassan. When I bowl round the wicket, I have no issues. In fact, I bowl well. The problem is bowling over the wicket. Whenever I bowl over the wicket, because my action is wide towards the left, I tend to fall onto the stumps while following through or lose my balance and collapse while delivering. When I try to open up my action, my line and length go all wrong. What advice can you give me? I want to stay round arm and wide, but how can I execute this successfully when coming over the wicket? Is there a particular way I should run in?
Well, there's one word that sort of jumps out here, and obviously without footage, it's really difficult to see whether this stands up. But the fact that you're going into the stumps from over the wicket tells me that you've got a fairly acute angle into your delivery stride. So the first word that I would say to you is straighter. Now, not everybody prefers to have a straight run-up. There's been lots of good spinners and lots of fantastic bowlers that have had angled approaches into the stumps, and I'm not standing here and saying that everybody needs to run in and bowl straight, but the fact that you're following through and hitting the stumps tells me that there's a misalignment with your target a little bit here. And even the best bowlers, if you think from a fast bowling perspective, Malcolm Marshall used to run in from an angle, Ian Botham had a huge curve, both of those got over 300 wickets in Test cricket and were fairly useful. And equally, you know, we've seen a number of spinners have an angled approach, Abdul Qadir being one that had an angled approach. In fact, most spinners, when I grew up watching television, had angled approaches to their run-ups. John Embry and Phil Edmonds were the two best spinners whilst I was very, very little watching the game on the box, and they both came in from acute angles. But what they did do was make sure that their whole lineup was going towards their target right at the end. So if you do prefer to come in on an angle, then try and make sure that your last stride, and particularly your delivery stride, is going towards your target from over the wicket. So that would be my first thing for countering over the wicket, is maybe experiment with slightly straighter run-up, or be more aware of the angle of your run-up when you're coming in to bowl from over the wicket. The second one is, if it's that much of a problem and you are such a good bowler from around the wicket, which sounds like you've got amazing control and you're happy from around the wicket, it's just try and play around with that and stay that side of a wicket when you're bowling to everybody. Obviously, it's a natural angle for right-handed batters, but it's an underrated angle for left-handed batters as well, because the benefit of it, similarly to a off-spinner bowling around the wicket to a right-hander, is the fact that you can beat both sides of a bat from the same angle. You know, if a ball grips, it can go on the inside and bring LBW and bowled into play, and if a ball runs on with the arm, then we can see that ball going across and taking the outside edge, bringing the keeper into play, or a slip, which you often see when people are bowling across the line of a bat face. So, you know, there might not be a need to change. It might just be that you say to yourself, right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to bowl around the wicket to everybody. I'm going to master the different lines that I need to bowl, to left-handers in particular, on different pitches, some that grip and some that don't. And away you go. So, you know, and the other question is, because you've sort of modelled yourself or you bowl similarly to Shakib, what does he do? you know, how does he go about it? Have a look at some video footage of him bowling and seeing how he manages himself, bearing in mind that you liken your bowling action to his. Often copying is a really good way of exploring some areas to develop within your own game.
Have you ever seen this problem firsthand, Lavers?
Oh, yeah. I think having guys operate with an angle, which can work very successfully, is also potentially a bit of a hazard. And I can understand where he's coming from. One of the key things I would point out with a performer of his level or of, let me think, an Imran Tahir's level, I'm just thinking of current guys who work on a quite an acute angle, would be that you've got to remember they're also professional athletes, these guys. So yes, they're working with what technically looks like a similar action to you, but it might be that the tools that they have that are allowing them to do that. So physically, they might have a strength that allows for a change of direction whilst maintaining balance, because they've worked at it and because they've really thought about, or they've had someone who's really considered how strong they need to be to make that kind of change of direction whilst maintaining balance and whilst delivering a ball. So there's probably a little bit more to it sometimes than just the technical side. But as we've seen, the technical side isn't the be-all and end-all. You can be different. You can do things different ways. But sometimes you just have to learn how to cope with that and how to manage that. Gareth would probably have a better idea on Saqib, but I would imagine he's physically probably in pretty good shape and core strength-wise, he's probably pretty strong, and he's obviously very, very, very well trained in the action he's got. So it might be that the level of repetition and the physical work that's gone alongside that has allowed him to create the alignment he wants from the angle, which probably doesn't promote that initially. And then same for Imran Tahir as well. Who I know hasn't been the best over the years sometimes with his S&C work, but again, he's strong enough to make that adaptation in change of direction when he's coming into bowl, and subsequently he does line up well enough that he can control his body position and he can control exactly what he's doing when he gets to the point of the crease. So away from the technical side of things, there might be a physical element you can consider that will help you in doing what you do, and it sounds like pretty successfully a lot of the time. So, it might be something away from the technical side to think about.
Time now for 60 seconds of uninterrupted chat from one of the members of the team. It's the Soapbox, and this week it's Mark Garraway. So, Gareth, over to you.
Well, this week it's about resilience and it's about early diversification in sports. And something, resilience is to me the most important capacity to have from a mental toughness point of view. And it often comes from people's ability to bounce back from disappointment. And there's a lad that's been selected for England U19s this week. He's got a full-time contract with Gloucestershire. Fantastic cricketer, but somebody who's had a number of knockbacks throughout his career and bounced back magnificently. He was also a multi-sports player, so came in as an all-rounder, scholarship, rugby player, footballer, cricketer, probably in that order or something like that, and yet has found his way in cricket very late and achieved real good things in the last couple of years after being told he wasn't good enough by a county and told that he wasn't good enough by several coaches. He's bounced back and will make his debut in a couple of weeks. So resilience and early diversification, if you can take George Hankins' lead on that one, then you won't go too far wrong.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We are about to leave you, but before we do that, we need to decide on the winner of this week's competition, which is, of course, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And so the questions on offer this week were AJ's question about his passion versus his parents, and Ishan's question about his slow left arm spin bowling. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Sam's question this week. Very interesting set of circumstances. the option between staying around the wicket and mastering around the wicket to both right and left-handers versus the ability maybe to straighten up a run up slightly or at least be more aware of their delivery stride, like an Imran Tahir, like a Shakib does. So maybe there's a course in there that help you out with that.
Fantastic. Hopefully it can. And yeah, interesting question about, you know, what playing to your strengths or, you know, trying to improve your skills, improve your range of things. So, you know, how you spend that time and that kind of experimentation versus nailing what you can already do. That's always interesting, isn't it? Now, if someone, Gareth, was listening to the show and they thought that they want to have their question answered and also have their chance to win the prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show every week, that's pretty easy to do. Just go to your favourite podcast app, click on to the search box and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and then there's a subscribe button there which you can tap on there, and whichever app you use, you'll get that free to your device. If you want to get the shows in a more manual way, or you want to stream them from the website, or you want to download them, then you get the show notes, then you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, fellas.